And welcome to Deep Cuts. I'm your co-host, Rebecca McKendry, and with me is Elric Kane. We are both preparing for trips today, but we've got lots of good stuff to talk about. How
well,
you doing?
You might have lots of good stuff. I have stuff to talk
You
about.
Have stuff to talk about.
My quality control is very mixed this week. I took some risks. They didn't all pay off. I did rewatch The Backrooms with kids because the kids wanted
You let
to.
your kids see it.
Well, they wanted to. So it was more of an ask. And I don't understand it much more than I did. I it's not that I don't understand it. Like, I understand the story. I'm still trying to kind of work through the appeal to that demographic about it based on the materials, because the movie is so adult. It's like just basically adults going through their
It's
shit in
trauma
therapy.
porn. It is straight
so
trauma porn.
I understand the found footage stuff, and I understand the aesthetic being of interest, because it is definitely tapping into Minecraft and so many other games. But I think I'll always be a little with that one. Like when I watch Obsession, I'm like, I know exactly what I love about this movie. And I like Backrooms. I think it's interesting. I just don't love it. And I don't know. Like, it's just one of those movies I think I'll always be wrestling a little bit with. But it was interesting to watch it. They neither found it, and they don't watch horror films, as you know, yet. And this is actually probably one of the first I've ever asked to watch. And
Really?
neither were that disturbed. I thought they might be disturbed by, like, the big guy and stuff. They were both, maybe there's one little jolt, but overall, a bit of tension, but they were totally fine. And I was like, interesting. Okay. So we'll see.
Yeah.
It might be able to lead to more. This could be their gateway. I don't know.
Yeah, I had taken a group of horror-loving 13-year-olds to that initial screening, which was really cool to hear them talk about philosophy on the way out the door of whatever.
Yeah, they know way
meant.
more than we do about it.
Oh,
Yeah, that's
yeah,
for sure.
like they completely got it. I have not shown it to Strummer yet, who really wants to see it, but I need to, because he will. I mean, Strum watches enough horror. I'm not too worried. He plays a lot of horror video games, and he watches a lot of horror on YouTube, like analog horror and you know, all of the SCP stuff. So I'm sure he would be able to handle it, but.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
just an interesting. Look, I think it's artistically a very interesting movie, interestingly put together. But I think I'll always be scratching my head just a little bit about why it connects so well with that age group. Obviously, the IP part is not the. I understand that. I understand its history. It's more just like, huh? It's so adultly. I don't really get it. Like when we were that age watching Nightmare on Elm Street, I get that it is a teenager filled movie with all the same themes of teenagers, and this is
Suburbia,
not.
which was
Yeah, this
like
is
the
about
big
their
thing in the
parents.
80s.
So I don't, that's where I'm like, huh, it's interesting that, it's also interesting even that he chose them as the characters. Like Backrooms could have been about young people, could have been about a kid at home. It could have been about anything. It's just interesting. I don't know if I care enough.
I always assumed watching Backrooms, you know, my kids would make up stories about it. And for some reason, I always thought it was like kids roaming in IKEA and they get lost in there. That was just kind of like the general mythology that I'd built in my own head. So yeah, it is fascinating that he decided to root it in such a traumatic adult with a therapist.
And both of
It's
them are
very adult.
traumatized. And I am more interested in his idea of making it more of a series, like with multiple storylines. I think that would be fun to see. That I'd be more curious about than a second movie at
Oh,
the
yeah.
moment, to be
Yeah.
perfectly honest. But
I agree. Same with that's how I felt with Talk to Me. I'm excited to see what they do, but I was very much like, I feel like you pick up the hand, you put the hand in another
it's a cool
part of the
concept,
world and see what happens in another part of the world with the hand instead of revisiting those same
Oh,
characters
yeah, me
again.
too. Yeah, I agree. It's because it's so playful, even though I love the first one.
Yeah, same with It Follows. I'm always like, I want them to pick up. I want them to take that same haunting thing and take it two states over 10 years later instead
Well,
of like rooting it.
because it is a pattern, that one. So you are, yeah, I agree. They are revisiting the same characters. I know they're making it right now, or it might have just wrapped.
I think it just wrapped.
I think it just wrapped. So I'm, you know, the main people are back in. But I hope they do something other with it. Like, I hope they explain that the last decade it's gone somewhere else, and maybe it's full circle or something. But
that's what worked so well for Smile for me, was that it was an entirely, you know, it was very just the lightest of connection up at the top.
Now,
And
that's a
then
good
it was
sequel.
just a complete pickup and put it in a new place. And it is, it's, I honestly, I've been having to do work for, I'll just say a Fangoria project because I can't announce it yet, on what the scariest movies are ever made. And I've had fun debating with people over whether Smile 1 or Smile 2 is better and which one's scarier.
I don't know which one's better. I found Smile 1 definitely the scarier one when I first
Oh,
saw
see, I think Smile 2 is scarier.
Well, in terms of jump scares and stuff, I just found it scary. But Smile 2, I was more impressed with as a movie ambition-wise and like directing wise, character, the character is really interesting kind of character. And
Yeah.
anyway,
Well, the one
yeah.
that I went to see at the theater that I will kick off with just because it's a quick mention, I saw Minions and Monsters. Because my kids are technically too old for that at this point, but we love the Minions. So we were like, oh no, we're still gonna go. Like, we'll still go see every Pixar movie so I can bawl my eyes out. Fucking Toy Story. And we're still gonna go see all the Minion movies. So, and this one we had to because one of the main characters is Cthulhu.
Yeah, that's what I was interested in.
So we went to see it. The whole thing is a love letter to Hollywood. And that is the reason that you need to see it, is because it's all about how Hollywood was, it's basically like Singing in the Rain with the Minions. It's about Hollywood was transitioning from silent films to sound, and they were trying to find ways to revitalize it. And the Minions decide they want to make a monster movie. And so the whole thing is set in Hollywood with them meeting Charlie Chaplin, meeting Buster Keaton. And it's got all of these like famous movie scenes in it that you're basically like the Minions are Forrest Gumping, like how they were involved in this movie and how they were involved in this movie. And so it's just a really cute love letter to Hollywood, in addition to having Cthulhu and a bunch of other Lovecraftian monsters in it. Like, it's really fun. So I've seen some non-horror critics being like, what the fuck is this with all the monsters? And I'm like, oh my God, it's Cthulhu, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I
So
saw a mummy in the trailer and I was like, okay, I can
it's
work
really
with
quick. The mummy's in
that.
there really quick, but it's really, really fun. So I enjoyed it. I think it's good for kids of all ages. Okay, but that was just my quick
Yeah,
mention.
the only other new thing I haven't seen much at all, actually. But I caught up to where we are with Cape Fear now. So I was behind three episodes and I just watched them. And it's so offbeat. It is so great because what I love about it is it's not like the other two movies. It's not just tracing them, which I like both of those movies. It's got a few nods, but it almost feels like they're purposely going in opposite directions. And I don't know if it's going this way, but I keep going, is this? And so I'm saying this not as a spoiler, so don't worry. But I'm starting to wonder if this is going to be more about, the bad guy being actually the good guy and the people who put him away being the bad guys. Like, I have a feeling it could even go that far. Anyway, either way, it's been pretty good. It's a little inconsistent with each episode to episode in terms of directing, but the latest episode I wanted to call out, it's called Possum, and it's so good. Definitely one of the best things I've seen this year in terms of that kind of thing. And it's Trey Edward Schultz, the guy who made It Comes at Night and Frisia.
Ooh.
He directed this one episode. It's just, you can feel the cinematic kind of touch on it. It was really cool. But Javier Bardem's like kind of killing it. It's a really fun. It's unfortunately it's one of those shows that will all come down to how it lands, if it's because it's kind of messy and it's going in crazy directions. They even do the De Niro laughing in a movie theater scene. They do with the daughter of this alternate kind of daughter of Javier Bardem's
Oh,
character. So
whoa.
she's eating sardines in a movie theater and laughing at a kid's film, and it's just really odd. Like, so instead of smoking a cigar, so it's interesting. So if you haven't tried it, I do think people who want to see something different, it is different, and it's a little wacky, and it's very cinematic. So I thought it was cool.
Nice.
But we'll see how it wraps up.
Okay, I'm gonna take you to my one new thing. Hold on. I am making note that you did see Cape Fear. Sorry, I take notes
The
during the
show,
show, people. Yeah,
not
the
Cape Fear
show.
the original.
Okay, the one new thing I watched, I had not planned to cover on this podcast. I was just watching it because I had seen a number of our friends rave about it online. And so I was like, I'm going to sit down and watch it. And then after I started watching it, I was like, this is just fucking weird enough that I can cover it on the show. And that is, I love Boosters.
Oh, I
So
love that director. I haven't seen it.
Boots Riley. Yeah, I
Yeah,
loved
Boots.
his other film, Sorry to Bother You. And I
Yeah,
mean,
it's great.
Sorry to Bother You definitely is the same science fiction, surreal, absurdist style. This takes everything that's going on in that one and basically says, like, hold my beer, and doubles down on it. So this was released by Neon in theaters. I think it did like a week in theaters a couple months ago, and so it's now coming to VOD. I was not expecting this to get as weird as it gets because the trailer makes it look very much a like more of like a society film. Like, it's got a lot to say about society, and the movie does, but how weird science fiction and horror it gets in the process, I was not expecting at all. At its core, it's about a group of girls who live in a depressed area of the Bay. They always joke that they don't like it to be called the ghetto, but that's kind of the best connotation. And they steal clothes from this designer. There's this designer called Metro Designs. It's run by Demi Moore. She charges thousands of dollars for her clothes. She has a $100,000 suit. And what they do is they go in, they create a distraction. and then they steal clothes and then they resell them at a reasonable cost in their own neighborhood. And so they call themselves boosters, and they see it as kind of like we're Robin Hood. We're the Robin Hoods of fashion. We're stealing from these like wealthy people and we're giving it back to the poor and we're giving them affordable fashions at what they can afford. Well, one of the girls discovers that Demi Moore's character, who is this high fashion designer, has stolen some of her designs. Like she had entered them into contests, she'd put them out there a little bit, and Demi has blatantly stolen one of the designs. So at that point, they all decide just to take her down. Now, this also has a lot to say about the workers in China, because the workers in the Chinese factory are all getting lung cancer from the chemicals that she uses to make the clothes and the sandblasting that she uses on the jeans. It's got a lot to say about the girls who are working in the shops that are kind of there while the thefts are going on, because they're all being paid under minimum wage with tips and things like that. So it's really making this giant statement on the fashion industry, on unpaid, minimum paid labor, fashion being sent overseas, and the employees that were hiring to work at the shops. Like it has so much to say on that. But then there is all this absurdist science fiction stuff that just starts creeping in by about the 20-minute mark. Lakeith Stanfield is in it as a soul-sucking snake demon who feeds through oral sex. So he literally sucks your soul out through oral sex in one of the most graphic fucking wild scenes that I have seen this year. And this is not even a horror film. It was fucking nuts. Like
Well,
I
because
can't
yeah, in
believe.
his last movie, it's like normal-ish and surreal, and then it gets into the weird horse penis, horse stuff, and you're
Horse
like,
stuff.
whoa, where is this going? Which is pretty crazy.
And that's how this was, where every, and then suddenly they find a portal device so that they can move clothes, and it like literally creates time jumps so you can say where it starts and say where the portal ends, so you can put something in it and it'll pop out on the other side. And then there's time travel stuff happening as well. And so there's all these portals and time machines and demons, and it's just, it gets so fucking weird and sci-fi and horror with Lakeith Stanfield, and it was just beautifully shot. Oh my God, this thing was gorgeous. A financial flop, incredibly. It costs money to be this visually weird. And this was 20 million for Neon. And I think it's made back like 9 million at the box office. So, like, even Boots Riley has come out and been like, yeah, this one didn't do too well. But holy shit, I loved this movie. I loved this not knowing where it was going. I love how fucking just shocking it got with the oral sex demon stuff. I loved how weird it was, and it had a lot of social statements to make in the meantime. So, I love Boosters. I will watch whatever else he makes.
Yeah, hopefully he gets to keep making them after that. That I felt the same way about his first one. I thought it was great, fantastic. So, all right, not as lucky. Here we go.
Oh, we're going
I'm
into
calling
your
this.
just okay.
I'm calling this my summer of SOV.
Oh my God, you
Summer of
did this. You
SOV.
did this to yourself.
I did do this to myself. So what I've learned is that I like stuff shot for the home video market in Japan. The home video market of America, I'm trying to think about this. I can't say I've ever loved
Like
an
wood
SOV.
chipper? No,
No, I don't love
no,
them. They're bad.
no.
Woodchipper Massacre is like fun to laugh at, but
Yeah, and
Sledgehammer and
like
there's a
boarding
boarding, but Boarding
house.
House, I
Yeah,
don't love it. It's a kind of
no, it's just
obnoxious.
kind of an okay. Like it's.
I think the thing is, I love regional horror. Love it. And low budget regional horror. That's like Nightmare USA is one of my favorite books on that stuff. It's because the barrier of entry to make a movie was to shoot on film. So even somebody who isn't a very good filmmaker had to learn something to load a film camera to make those movies. But once we're talking video, there is actually no barrier of entry. And as you'll see with my next two picks. Anyway, this movie is quite popular with people, but not in its reviews. But like I know a lot of people really like it. And I think if I saw it with a crowd, I probably would have had a better experience. But it's a good one to kick off summer of SOV, summer of SOV, summer of SOV. And that is Blood Lake.
I've seen the poster. I've
I've seen the
never
cover
seen
many
it.
times. Yeah. Director Tim Boggs made this movie. He went on to become a very famous Hollywood sound recordist, I believe, but definitely sound guy. He even maybe even has an Oscar nomination. But this is one movie. 1987. It opens with six teenagers driving cars, four that are of the older side and two who are like 12, 13. And there's like a hookup storyline kind of thing. And they're all going to party for one weekend in the awesome happening place, Cedar Lake, Oklahoma. So regional horror, I'm on board. There
Oh.
isn't even an accidental composition that I was drawn to. Not a shot that I was like, ooh, not the whole movie. Like you would think there would be an accidental. There's one where you see a bad guy for a second. I was like, ooh. I was also watching a bad copy of what's already a bad looking movie, so that probably wasn't great. It opens with them driving and a lot of that, and then they get to the cabin. There's a lot of that. The script feels like these definitely none of them are actors. Like they're all amateur, which is the charming part of it, I would say, in some ways. Like, it is totally watchable for that reason. Like, watching, and it does feel often improvised, and they're just talking about stuff like it's just like sandwiches, and then, of course, getting laid and all this stuff. Anyway, it's not good. They're down by what it's known for is a very long, water skiing scene that just keeps going and doesn't really have payoff with the big horror moment. This isn't Curtains where you're going to suddenly have the guy, on his ice skates with the creature mask. Eventually a couple of them get killed and kind of off screen thing. Before they showed up, there was a masked killer. I don't even know if he has a mask. I think he's just this big old guy who killed the gardener. And then they get there, and of course he's now going to menace them. A couple gets killed after the jet of the water skiing. They find it. No one even decides to like, let's leave town. That doesn't even happen. And they slowly start getting picked up. The only fun storyline is the young 12 or 13-year-old kid who there's another girl closer in age to him who everyone's like rooting for. Like, you guys are going to hook up on there. And you're just watching it go. It's the only thing that's like slightly recognizable as human. It is not got a lot going for it in terms of. I read a lot of you, probably the most reviews I've ever read, saying this is the worst slasher movie ever made. So that's always something because there's so many slashers. I think that, but it would be in the conversation.
Wow.
Shot in 10
Wow.
days. Here's the sad part. I almost, and I don't want to sound, this sounds snobby if you put it this way, but it's almost like it's below, like if there's a film that people would have called the worst slasher shot on film, like real movie made until the 90s or whatever, even that would be in a still in a different league than something that's shot on video. And because shot on video back then does not mean what it means. Every movie is shot on video now, but video isn't video anymore. Video looks like film. It's just, I do think in a group this I probably would have laughed a few times and at least had a bit more fun. But man, watching it, I was like, no, there really isn't much. There's no pulse. Then things happen and a couple people are killed and then it wraps up. And then the most interesting shot is at the end of the movie, and I don't know what it means. I assume the director just came back to the town when it wasn't summer anymore, and it's a man. I don't know if it's the killer or not because it wasn't a very good copy. And he's standing by where the lake was, and it's all gone. There's no lake, but it's definitely the real place. And he's just standing there at this empty nothingness cavern, and the shot keeps pulling back. It was like the one moment that they're doing something like interesting or artistic, but I didn't know what it meant. And I was like, huh, that was an interesting ending. And it might have been like maybe he went back a couple years later and the lake had dried up and he took a shot of it. I have no idea. It's the kind of movie where better than watching the movie, and both of my movies are like this, is just to go read the Bleeding Skull review of the movie. Because they do the best work.
I love Bleeding Skull.
I
They're
truly
just,
believe they're my favorite site when especially in regards to this kind of stuff, because they write about it with love, but also they're making fun of it in the right ways.
But it feels like they're hugging it at the same time. Like they
Yeah. No,
understand what it
exactly.
is and they're appreciative of it. That's the thing is they give it respect while
Yeah.
also kind of like, okay, and here's what's funny about it.
And I don't want to, I'm not shitting on SOV. I just personally have not seen any that I've loved. Like even like Blood Cult, I didn't think was very good. Obviously, I love video violence in my way, and that might be the closest, but that feels a little closer to a normal movie in terms of structure. But I will keep watching things in hopes that one lights my fire at some point. But this was not it. So. But it was a summer movie and it was a blood movie, so I wanted something like that. Now, where I do give it credit, it was shot in 10 days. So full credit to anything shot in 10 days. That's Blood Lake, 1987, part of Summer SOV.
Well, I'm going to have to do some SOVs here to keep up with you. I did
Yeah.
not. So I opted for some high quality cinema by
Good.
William Castle.
Nice.
And I decided to watch Homicidal from 1961, which was one of the William Castle films I had never seen before. And I'd been reading one of the John Waters books that talked about it with like great appreciation and even referred to it as like one of his best made movies. And I was like, huh, had never really even been on my radar as opposed to like 13 Ghosts and all the other amazing stuff. So I jumped in. This is one of his later films.
What's
This
the name
is
of it?
Homicidal.
I've heard the name. I don't know if I watched that one
Yeah,
before.
I had for some reason confused this with the Joan Crawford one, where Joan Crawford
Straight
plays
jacket.
like, yeah, Straitjacket, plays like the crazy drunk mom. This is not. So when I'd been thinking that, oh, I've seen that, that's got Joan Crawford in it. This is not that one. This is vastly different. So this is 1961. He still did the whole William Castle thing where he introed the movie and came out and told you about how scary it was going to get. And I'll get to the gimmick that he used in a sec. But basically, this has gotten a lot of flack now because I'll call it reverse psycho. It's kind of gender bendy, and I don't want to give away the twist because I did not see it coming. Like, it was a damn good twist because I did not see this coming. But I will say that some of the psychology, much like psycho, has not aged that well. That said, this was a really well-shot movie, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, like, you have to get over kind of the cringe factor of the psychology behind it, but it is a fun movie. It's basically about this woman who inserts herself into this wealthy family. She kind of comes out of nowhere. She inserts herself into this wealthy family as a family friend. She marries the son really quickly, starts taking care of his elderly mom in their mansion. The mom's not able to talk anymore, but you get that she is scared to death of this woman that the son's just kind of letting take care of his disabled mom. And she, and there's no question about who's doing it. We see her start killing people. We see her pay a guy to marry her. Now, mind you, she's already married. And she pays a guy to marry her, and then they drive like 20 miles to go get married. And at the moment that they're supposed to get married, she goes crazy and stabs him and stabs the guy, the officiant, and everything. And so you realize real quickly that not only is she already married, but she's got like a trigger about marriage. Like there's something happening there where she's obsessed with it. She's constantly looking at wedding dresses and little figurines of brides and things like that. Like she's obsessed with marriage, but she's got some trigger with it. Well, another family friend who's friends with the whole wealthy family and has known them since they were kids, is real suspicious of what's happening there. Like, gets that the mom is scared to death of this woman, feels like the son and her have a weird relationship. Like, they don't really seem like a married couple as much as she's just like hanging out at the house and he's doing his own thing. And so she starts kind of getting involved to take care of the mother. And, so all the meanwhile, we see all these murders happening, and we know it's the woman doing it, that she's like snapping and having these weird like psychosexual snaps and killing people whenever somebody mentions wedding or gets in the way of a wedding or something like that. Then we get our promotional gimmick at about the 45-minute mark, probably hour mark. William Castle comes back on screen and says, "Hey folks, this is your fright break. This is your fright break. And at this point, any patrons who are too scared to continue with the movie, you can go to the lobby right now and you can get a refund." And the point in this movie, this is when the friend of the wealthy family is about to go into the house. And we know that that like serial killer woman is in there by herself and is standing there with a knife, like ready to kill her. So we're at this like heightened moment. And apparently, a lot of people still demanded refunds. Like this was not a really popular movie when it came out. And apparently for the first like couple of weeks that it was in theaters, a lot of people left at that point and asked for refunds. So Castle had to come up with some way to keep that gimmick in, but to keep people from walking out. So he created this thing in the theaters called the Coward's Corner. And so, in order to leave and get your refund, you had to go over to the Coward's Corner, and he instructed ushers to come in and encourage the audience to jeer the people who were going over to get the refunds. So it was supposed to be cowards, cowards, like making fun of them. And then nobody did it. So really quickly,
That's
he
pretty good.
eliminated the fact that like a bunch of people were asking for refunds. And apparently at the end of it, like it made $20,000 weekly, which was great in 1960, and there was like less than $100 in refunds. So,
Interesting.
I'm not going to give the ending, of course, or the twist or anything like that, but this did have a really good twist that I did not see coming. Reviews of it were still dodgy, like back then, but it's now considered to be one of Castle's best made films, and it's gotten some cult notoriety. So this was a really good watch. I wouldn't even call this like a Castle completionist. Like this was just a fun moved along. I enjoyed all of the kills. I enjoyed the psychology behind
Was this
the
like a psycho
lead
ripoff
serial killer.
timing wise? Was it
It's a
right up?
psycho ripoff. Like you can
Okay, yeah.
feel it, which is
Right.
why I kind of equate it to that because it's got like mom stuff
Yeah.
happening. So yeah, like some of the psychology now is bleh, but that said, it's got a vastly different ending. The way that it takes it, it goes in a completely different direction. But that said, this was really fun. So this is Homicidal, 1961.
Cool. Yeah, no, I've always meant to see that one. It looks like it's from his good period of
Yeah,
stuff.
this is a tight one.
Speaking of good, this isn't. The next one, well, this is somebody's great, actually. This is somebody's
Remember,
holy
somebody has
grail.
a poster on their wall.
No, and this I know, this is definitely very cult. I actually like this more than the last one because it's more unique, but it's less of a movie. So this one's called Blood Brothers. It's directed by this guy, Mike Diana, from 1989, and it is 50 minutes long. And it is the
That's a
storyline.
plus.
Yeah, exactly. The storyline, it felt like 3 hours. The storyline, a pair of drug addicted youths go on a killing rampage in their suburb in Florida. Now, what's amazing about this is it's literally kids. Like, not just actors, but like this guy was probably a kid, had a video camera with other kids. It's not, these are not, when I say non-actors for the last month, these are beyond non-actors.
These are like Devil Times Five kids or like
Like that
real kids
age, but
walking
real
around.
kids. These are real kids. So this film is only known because this director, so this is 89, so in the 90s, this took I'm just going to read what I read about it. For his infamous arrest, trial, and conviction in the 90s for his self-published comic, artist Mike Diana also made a string of homemade films. So he was one of the first people in America, I don't know if that's right, to be arrested for I guess indecency or something like that for a graphic novel. So he actually did time for a graphic novel. So think about that, in Florida.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it made him kind of famous. And he had prior to that, he had shot all these Super 8 movies when he was a kid and then these shot on video movies. So he was making this before he was as known as an artist. And you could only ever see this movie directly from him for all these years until Factory 25 recently. You can still buy it directly from his Vimeo. You can watch it there. But Factory 25 has put out a couple of his movies, including Baby Baked Jesus, which
Oh
doesn't sound
my.
controversial.
Yeah, not at all.
This one, the easiest way to sum this up is it basically feels like Trash Humpers vibes, but with kids doing much work. Like if you watch American Movie Again, there's a great part of American Movie is where it's showing the old movies that Mark Borchardt made when he wasn't shooting a film, like the really like Super 8 home movies, people being stabbed in the eyes, gore, like that kind of stuff. It's stuff that was never released. That's what this film feels like. So it feels like the kind of things we would have started making, but then it goes so dark. The performances, it's two boys. They are blood brothers. They cut their hands at the start and they make the blood brothers. And then they torture a guy. And then there's literally, I'm not even kidding. This looks like it's made by 12-year-olds. And there's
What?
li literally in a coat hanger abortion scene where
Oh
they
my
go up to a
God.
girl who's sunbathing and they go, "Oh, hey, how are you doing?" And then they pull out a coat hanger and they start giving her abortion. And you're just watching it going, "What the hell?" So it's like Trash Humpers, but mixed with something like much darker and much worse. It feels like the person who made this would go on to become a killer. That's
What
the
is
vibe. Yeah.
the year on this again? Because there's like,
89.
okay, there is so many, and there's one with Richard Gere, and
No. This is
yeah.
nobody that would
Okay.
anyone. Well, Mike Diana is his name. And so I did not know about his conviction. So this was just something I stumbled on because I decided to watch a couple SOVs. But this has obviously got more to the story, but it's like them doing different drugs. There's a decapitation scene. I mean, it's crazy how it does feel like something that could have influenced somebody, like a little bit of Gummo, a little bit of Trash Humpers, but then also feels kind of more real than those. There's scenes where the acting's so bad. Like there's another kid, not the main kid, and he's just looking right at camera with a smile while they're meant to be torturing him. And you're like, this is weirdly charming and entertaining, but also completely unhingedly bleak, you know. Especially as in Florida. I always think some of the bleaker ones come from Florida sometimes. Anyway, I don't know what I could say about this. It's part of it's part of my exploration. It's part of a journey I'm on into SOVs. Like I said, I think I found it slightly more interesting than the last one because it wasn't as generic as the last one. The last one was literally just any other kind of slasher but done badly. This is more like, oh, this is unhinged. And in a way that you're like kind of worried about the people who made it.
I think that the greatest thing about this is when you can finally Google it and find it, the very first thing that pops up is the Bleeding Skull review. So it's, yeah. So you get that first.
Oh, sorry, you froze.
Oh, I did. Oh, I'm so sorry. I said that the greatest thing about this is when you Google it and can actually find it, because there's a bajillion other Blood Brothers. The first thing that actually pops up about the movie is the Bleeding Skull review.
Oh yeah,
So.
and that one's particularly good on this because they really dive into all the history of it. I will say this movie would have been a little better if it did have Richard Gere. Like if you just put him into this, it would have been fascinating. He's like the victim, you know. But yeah, so this is an interesting one. I'm not sure if I'll watch his other movie yet. I might keep
Baked
exploring
baby
the fringe.
Jesus.
Yeah, I might keep exploring the fringes of Summer SOV, which I might regret. I was going to do a third one. I had one that actually looks interesting, and I have a feeling I'm going to like it, but I just ran out of time, so I watched something else as my third one,
You know, there was
not
a whole
SOV.
bunch. I have that Bleeding Skull book, and
Yeah,
when it
it's a good book.
first came out, I went through and I like post-it
Oh, yeah.
noted a whole bunch of movies that I was like, this looks watchable. And you know, who knows if they are or not, or if
I
they're
think their
just giving a
second.
mad respect, but yeah.
I think their second book. So the first book was just all their crazy stuff, and then the second one I think was all
All
SOV
SOV,
or
yep.
digital video things. And I flicked through it a lot. I did make a lot of notes. So there's I've never seen the one, and I should do it for the show called Ozone. It's just Ozone, and I've always heard it's pretty crazy. So maybe I'll make try to track that one down
We
for one
maybe
of
should
these.
do an episode. That would be like you guys did with the Psychotronic
Yeah,
on
where you
Pure
just pick a
Cinema,
few.
where
Yeah,
we
you pick a
each
few.
pick three from Bleeding
Yeah.
Skull that we've never seen before.
Yeah, no, we
That's
could
great.
tell that is something we could totally do. Like I will never throw anything. Look, there's a gem in there. There's going to be something that will melt my brain because it's close to kind of democratic filmmaking, right? Here's the video camera, kid.
Yeah.
But there's just so many things that are like the worst version of what you already watch in the 80s. It's like, so anyway, I got one more that's fun, a little more fun.
I have so much mad respect for all of those filmmakers, even if the films turn out. I mean, like, I just, the gumption that it takes to make a film
Yeah.
is, you know, even back then, you know, when you're looking at like a video camera, like, it still takes so much fucking gumption to just say, I'm gonna make a movie. And it's so
Oh, yeah.
much work. So, yeah,
Yeah.
anybody who can accomplish it, I'm mad respect for. Okay, so we're gonna go from Blood Brothers to one of the best horror movies out there.
How good.
Because this is, I had no intention of watching this. This was one of those nights when I sit there and I'm like, I need to watch something for the podcast. And
Yeah.
I start by going through all of my watch list on Plex. And then I'm like, eh, let's see what's on Tubi. Maybe I'll go over and see if there's anything new on Netflix. Nope. Maybe I'll go back here. So like 30 minutes have passed of me trying to pick a movie
Oh, I'm
and
so
then.
much. I'm like a 2 hour of scrolling guy for the ad. It's the worst waste of my time, but I
I
do love
have
it though.
so many watch lists and
Yeah.
Excel docs to try to keep me organized for what I want to watch. And then I'll look at them and it's like too much. And then I still spend a half an hour picking a movie. And so I had literally been staring at things for a half an hour and I end up back on Tubi and I'm trying to decide like which weird Italian film I'm going to watch that I haven't seen before. And this one pops up called The Evil Eye. And I'm like, whoa, I've never seen this poster before. This looks cool. Okay. The Evil Eye. We're in from 1961. And I was like, hey, it's the same year as Homicidal. So I'm going to do 61.
Oh,
So
cool.
let's go into The Evil Eye 1961. It starts, and the opening scene is on a plane. And we're hearing the inner monologue of what everyone on the plane is reading. And then it gets to this absolutely gorgeous girl who is reading a brutal murder mystery. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I've seen this before.
Different
What?
title.
I have seen this before.
Different title.
And that's when I realized I was watching The Girl Who Knew Too Much, which I
I
have
can't
seen
remember which one
before.
I saw it as. I don't know if the cuts are, maybe the cuts are a little different. I don't know.
I don't know. I watched
But
the whole thing.
I think it's one of the best black and white
Oh,
movies.
yeah.
Like in terms of like more modern black and white photography, it's amazing.
So by the time it gets, I'm watching the plane scene and I'm like, oh, this is fun. This is interesting. And then by the time the camera gets to her, I'm like, the fuck, Tubi? But at that point, it taken me 30 minutes to pick a movie. And I was like, fuck, I'm in. Okay, I'm in. It's probably been like 20 years since I watched The Girl Who Knew Too Much. I'm just in. So we're going to talk about Bava's classic, The Girl Who Knew Too Much, because Tubi pulled one over on me. Well, this was absolutely amazing. This was made by Sam Arkoff and AIP, and this is one of Bava's like super early films. According, and I don't know if this is true or not, Luigi Cozzi said that the original screenplay was more like a romance, and that Bava then went in and tried to make it more murder mystery. And then Bava apparently still thought the plot was silly, so he tried to make it super serious through the artistic filming. And
Yeah.
it worked. That is where this movie shines. I mean, like the lead girl, Nora, is absolutely fantastic, but oh my God, the filming in this
It's like
is,
closest to Repulsion,
it
basically. Like
is.
the photography, the black and white surrealist almost expressionism in the
It does not feel
color
like
lighting.
any
Yeah.
other black and white film
Yeah.
that was coming out at this time. Like
Yeah.
it feels like it's in color and it feels like the camera is alive. So the plot, for those who have not seen Bavis Opus, it is about an American woman named Nora who is traveling to Rome to take care of a sick aunt. And she gets there and we realize really quickly talking to the doctor that her aunt is like super sick and does not have long for this earth. The first night she's there, her aunt dies in the middle of the night during a power outage. And so Nora is like freaking out and doesn't know what to do and can't get anybody on the phone. And the lights are out. So she runs out into the middle of like the piazza to try to get help, where she is mugged and her purse is stolen and she gets knocked out. And then she wakes up and she has no ID and she's really confused about what's going on. And she sees a woman running out of a building, followed by a man who then stabs her violently. And then she like passes back out. The cops wake her up the next morning in a hospital and she's like, I saw somebody get killed last night. And they're like, oh no, crazy woman, you're drunk. You went through trauma. You know, we're sorry about your dead aunt, your stolen purse. You didn't see anybody get married,
Yeah,
murdered. You
I'm
were just
sad that we
crazy.
missed the plot. Our generation missed the plot device where you could see something bad and faint.
Yes.
And that's
Oh my
enough of a
God,
plot
that's so
device.
easy because
We
she
can't do that
faints.
anymore.
She
Like, you
faint
just
like she
pass
gets
out, you
mugged,
know?
she faints, she wakes back up, she's really groggy, she sees somebody get stabbed and she faints again. Like we are now past that point. We
Yeah, we
know
don't
it
get that
doesn't
anymore.
happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wish that we still had that because it really does give you like this beautiful
Yeah.
time lapse.
It's like being hit on the back of the head with a gun that happened in every movie, and then it's like
Every
the
movie
knockout
in the
scene. Yeah.
80s to like
Yeah.
give us a good time break.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she, whereas everybody begins to think that she's crazy. There's one detective who's kind of humoring her enough to say, like, hey, maybe, you know, we can at least go check this building out and things like that. But he doesn't exactly think that she's telling the truth. Everybody else think that she's nuts, but she's now there dealing with her passed away aunt and still trying to figure out what she saw. And she starts getting obsessed with who this could be. And that's when she starts getting phone calls from a killer who is giving her letters on the phone. He'll call and say, like, D is for death. And then he'll hang up. And at the same time, she's learning about this old case from a couple of years ago about this serial killer that they called the Alphabet Killer, who the cops think they arrested. They arrested a mentally ill man who always claimed he was totally innocent, but the cops think that they have solved this case. So when she starts relating it back to that, they're like, no, we caught that guy. It's not him. So this film is one of the ones that started the whole giallo trend.
Yeah,
And you
really
can
early.
really see where that visual style comes out of. It's incredibly well acted. We've got John Saxton in it as well, and Letitia Roman, who plays the girl, Nora, who is just amazing and gorgeous to look at. She's just electric on screen. But the biggest thing is that artistic filming, which apparently came out because Bava thought that the script was still too silly to be taken seriously. So he was like, I got to shoot this the hell out of this thing to make it really serious film. And oh my God, this movie is just because it's set in Rome, it's at the height of fashion, it's all these different piazzas and apartments and clothing changes and
I remember
photography.
light coming in, like her having to walk down a corridor or something, and light coming. Just it, I don't have my memories are all pretty abstract of the movie, but I remember it being one of my favorite Bavas, like right out of the
It's
gate.
gorgeous.
Yeah.
So highly, highly recommend it. Hey, if you want to watch it, it's on Tubi under the name The Evil Eye with a poster that does not look at all like the girl who knew too much. But hey, it's there. So highly, highly recommend it.
Always interesting when the double. I'm always curious if it means different cuts or just different marketing to make a little more money.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
don't know in this case because there's also nothing in it that made me think, oh, that's why they called it the evil eye. Like there was,
Right.
you know, it just didn't come up as like, oh, it's screaming plot line.
No.
But yeah, so and also I'm intrigued by the sales because it's still the same movie. So how can they sell it to one market? Like we can sell it to this company as the girl who knew too much, but we're going to sell the same movie over here as the evil eye. Like it just, I don't understand how the legal side of that works. But whatevs, I got
Yeah.
to watch a cool movie again.
That's one downside to being people, because it's not the show's fault. I am just a deep cut. Like, this is what I'd be watching anyway, even if we didn't have the show. I'm always trying to watch the things I haven't watched. But it is one of the downsides is I miss sometimes, like, going back to the best films I've ever seen, the best horror films, you know? It's because I don't see them as often as I'm seeing some stuff that's pretty bad. But that's okay. That's my choice. That's not no one
Your
else's.
choice.
That is
You
my
did
choice.
this to yourself, SOV Summer.
I mean, maybe I'm going to turn it around with this one. Let me ask you a question, and you decide if I'm turning it around. Have you ever wondered, like me, if Eric Estrada has ever played a priest? Well,
Hasn't come up, but
definitely a rhetorical question, but Eric Estrada. Look no further than on Tubi. Okay, you know I was doing SO. You know it's an upswing. It's a bad sign when my upswing is to a Fred Olen Ray movie.
Oh my, I love Fred. Oh my
Well, this is an
God.
upswing from the SOVs. This is one I hadn't heard of, and I think it might be one of his better films. It's called Spirits. Had never even heard of it. It's just called Spirits,
It's
one
not
word.
called like Bikini Babes on
That's what I mean.
Bikini
Like it's
Beach,
kind of
getting
so.
topless with their
Yeah,
bikinis.
this is a lot simpler. This is 1990, but in it you will have Eric Estrada from Chips. Sorry for people not from my generation. Chips being the greatest TV show. And when I taught film at the Catholic high school, one of his kids went there, so I saw Eric Estrada a few times at social events, and that was very exciting to me. I was like, oh, that's Eric Estrada from Chips. That's all I know him from is Chips. Anyway, he is not a good priest, but that's a different story. Okay, what's cool about this movie, and I only watched it because I did see a couple of people say it was pretty good. The first half actually feels more like an Italian horror film from the era. It feels like the Italian ripoff of Legend of Hell House. So it starts very much like
Wow.
Legend of Hell House. They build up this house where there's been a couple of major murders, and that the proprietor was like a perverted, into the occult kind of guy. There's been two families have been murdered there. So an assembled team of ESP experts, one person with logic, one person who's a scientist, one person who feels the spirits, played by Brink Stevens, of course. And she's actually, it always surprises me because
I love her.
she's known as like one of these kind of, one of the parts of those kind of girls. She's a, seems like a really good actor. Like that's the thing when I watch her, I'm like, oh, I wonder if the reputation of the kind of stuff she's in takes away from that. She actually seems like she really can act. She's in there as the ESP person. She's fun. The first half, they're going into the house. There's some creepy setup, but it's all done really straight. It is never really campy. And that was a nice surprise, and I was like, oh, I kind of like the tone of this movie as they're investigating. It would keep cutting throughout the movie to Eric Estrada as a kind of a fallen priest who has strayed one time, so he's trying to get back on, like with a woman. He's trying to get back his sense of self. It's definitely an Exorcist ripoff, and this old nun keeps saying, are you okay? And he's like, get away from me, I need to be alone. But the best scene in the whole movie, so it's clearly that was filmed in a day, nothing to do with the rest of the shoot. Like, we have Eric Estrada for a day, we're shooting him in a church, and the rest is these people investigating the house. And at some point, the storylines will meet. But there's one scene that I did think was actually really good, where basically a attractive nun confronts him and says, why are we doing this? And it starts going really far. She starts taking off parts of her clothes, and it's played by Michelle Bauer, who's obviously ridiculously attractive in 1990 and in this period. And they end up having the scene, but then she realizes she's actually Satan speaking through her, and he's like, I got you again. There is a line in this movie. If I can find, I think I read, okay. She says this out loud in a movie, so you're in good hands. She whispers in his ear after like trying to seduce him, and she goes, "You knew your way around a pussy pretty good for a priest." I mean, that was
That's a
said
great
aloud. I'm
line.
sorry, so that was pretty good in a trashy movie. He fights her off. He doesn't fall completely under her spell, even though the audience does. We're all like, can we just watch that movie now? Can I just watch whatever Michelle Bauer is doing in her nun outfit? This one's also shot in 9 days, so that's actually impressive because shot on film. The house stuff in the second half,
Wait, this one's shot on film
this one's shot on
in
film,
9 days.
in the
Wow, see, that's
1990s.
impressive.
It is like, and it's not a bad movie. Like, it's like a 2.5, 3 star, but like kind of entertaining at times. The first half is definitely more my bag. I was like, oh, this is going to be a real movie, in quote marks. And then the second half goes like almost pure Evil Dead ripoff. Like, all the things that were kind of subtle in the first half, suddenly, each one of them is having an interaction with a demon in the house. And then suddenly they're wearing the full makeup, like, come on, get me. They're playing Deadites. And you're like, oh, okay. That's a little less, original in the moment. Feels a little goofy by the end of it. It's straight to video, like it was made, at first straight to video, but straight to video is different than SOV, right? So,
Yeah, and there's some straight to video bangers, so.
no, straight to video, nothing shameful about that. Eric Estrada eventually does come into the storyline for like I said, it probably was one day of filming with him, and he's kind of the weakest thing in this movie. The other part of the movie is kind of interesting. It's on Tubi. It looks good. It's a good quality one. I kind of enjoyed it, and especially coming off the two SOVs, I was like, this is kind of fun. It's not going to sit my. I realize I probably need to fill in a couple gaps of Fred Olen Ray stuff from that period. You know, I'm definitely more of a Wernowski guy because his films are always fun. Like he always does something fun, but.
Wynorski's got a couple that I consider like genuinely fun films. Like he's got Haunting of Marella, I think is pretty good. And then he's got one that's set in a
He did the
hotel.
gargoyle stuff. He did the
Yeah.
chopping
Like I
morals
can't
also in
remember
there.
the
But
one that is set in a hotel that I
oh, the
actually
Transylvania one, because that's really good.
Transylvania
Transylvania
Twist,
Twist.
that's it.
That's the one you like, and I like. I only saw it last year, and I really think that's fun. That's a really funny call. But his difference is he is always making something with camp. Like he's never making usually a straight horror film. Whereas Fred, I think, is somewhere in between. He just likes to put bikini babes in the middle of his movies. But I haven't seen too many of his ones, so. I will say when I first my first gig in LA, the first week I got here, when I was on one of the Wernowski ones, Fred Olen Ray's son, Chris Olen Ray, was the AD, and my friend got me on the set and I was acting or whatever, I'm background or whatever. And then he said my name and Chris like freaked out, ran over to me, lifted up his shirt, and he had a massive Elric tattoo on his arm.
Oh my
And he was
gosh.
like, I've never met a
The
person called
comic book
Elric. Yeah, the
character,
comic book
Elric.
character. And even the word Elric was on his arm. So it was like my first week in LA. And I was like, oh, that's cool. This is how life's going to be like here. I'm going to dress up as a piranha man and act in camel spider movies. This will be great. Never did any of that again, but that was fun. A different
Oh
era.
my gosh. Okay, all I have left is like four books that I'm going to do one line each about. So do
Okay,
you have
cool. No,
anything
I'm good.
left?
That's me, yeah.
Okay. Then I'm going to start with the four books I have read so far this summer. And so I'm just going to keep them short, except for one that I really quite dug.
Oh, I will say that the only one I read because I won't go into it because we already did an episode, but I finished Nightjars.
How was it?
I really liked it. Yeah, it's really a. I don't want to give too much away, but it's actually we skirted around on the show, but it's really a kind of big vampire lore movie book. Like it really goes into a big original feeling vampire lore, and I thought that was really cool. So I think people will dig it. It doesn't come out properly till September though. So, but I did finish. That's the only book I've finished so far this summer. So.
I've got four, and yeah, and all I also read a book on the history of cults called Cult Rising from Quirk Books, and that one like fucked me up more than any horror book I read does because it was about all of these like real cults. Like it was some
Oh,
dark stuff,
interesting.
and there were times I had to put it down because I was like, I have to go to bed, and this is gonna kind of,
Oh,
it's
yeah. Well,
so
because they're
weird.
real, because this shit happens in real world life, you know?
I can read the most fucked up horror novel right before bed, put it down, sleep like a baby, but I'm reading like the history of these real cults and I'm like, oh my God, this just got really fucking dark. And I'll have to
Yeah.
put it down and like grab a comic to read for a
Yeah.
while. But it was a good book. If you're interested in the history of cults, I'm sure it will come up later as we're doing kind of our history parts on the regular show. Just because there was such like a rich history in there. But that was Cult Rising from Quirk.
Okay.
But the four fiction books I read, The Sea Hides Its Dead by Megan Bontrager. This was like the Lovecraftian cosmic horror I needed in my life this summer about a scientist, and all of a sudden an island appears in the middle of nowhere with a cave in the middle of it, and they don't know why it's there, and they assemble a team of scientists to go investigate. Like this was everything Lovecraftian I needed. It was a little long, but that said, I love Lovecraft, so I'm in for anything. The other one that was Lovecraftian for me was Body of Water by Adam Goffrey. This one's not releasing till September. And it's about a father and his estranged daughter who are trying to kind of rekindle things. And they meet in this diner, but they quickly become trapped at first by crazy guys with guns, but then a seemingly living body of water. It's like the blob, but it's a body of water and it takes over the diner and it's trying to get in. This is basically like The Mist, but in the middle of like an Appalachian diner. I loved the first half of this book. It takes a hard twist in the second half. And then it lost a lot of momentum for me, but the first half was awesome. So yeah, give it a read. Let me know what you think of the second half because that's where I was kind of like, I just don't know. Crafting for Sinners. I had a really good time with this one. This is Crafting for Sinners by Jenny Kiefer. This is coming out in October. This is about a queer woman who takes a job at a big box craft store that is, she finds out, is run by a cult. Death giving Hobby Lobby vibes here. Definitely. And she takes this job just because she needs it, and she quickly realizes that this is like some type of weird religious cult running this entire big box store. And not only are they completely against any type of any type of queer lifestyle whatsoever, they're incredibly homophobic. They're also kind of planning on the end of the world. And so, n as soon as they find out that she's gay, it comes to a head. She has to defend herself against everything because everything's happening all at once with craft supplies. This was really silly and fun all at the same time. So I really loved this one. It was just kind of a nice, fun read with a lot of undertones. Obviously, it's saying a lot, but it was a fun read. So that's Crafting for Sinners. And then the one that I'm kind of the most perplexed by. I had been really excited to read this because I'd heard so much about it. This is 25 Days from Peer Jacobson. And this was, oh gosh, I didn't even write down the country of origin. It was like some Scandinavian country. It was published in 2024, and this blew up as like this huge Christmas novel there, and it just now is getting released in English. I think it was a couple months ago, it just finally got released in English, and I was so excited to finally get to read this. It is about a dad who, in an attempt to make his family, his like wife and kids, less dysfunctional, he takes them to this really isolated cabin in the middle of nowhere for the holidays. Because that's how you get everybody to love each other. I
Yeah.
can tell you right now from
Shining
camping
style.
trips, that does not work. But that said, Shining style, they're going to go to this really isolated cabin for the days surrounding Christmas, so 25 days. They get there, and while they're trying to work out their own shit, someone starts leaving gifts on the doorstep. And at first, it seems really kind of innocent. It seems really kind of sweet. Like it's a pine cone, you know, it's little stuff like that. So it starts out real innocent, but then it starts getting more and more fucked up. And then you start realizing that the killer knows a lot about them. And I say killer because it shifts to like dead animals at one point. And you realize that this person knows a lot about them, like a lot more than they should know, and that has been stalking them. And it gets very cachet-like. This was 90% amazing. I spent the whole time going, oh my God, who is this? Who is this? Who is this? By the ending, I was kind of like, it like flubbed it for me. But 90% of this book, I was all in. I would be surprised if this does not get picked up for a movie, just because the actual premise of it was so cool, of this isolated family that can't get out, kind of slow rolling into realizing that not only is this person kind of stalking them, but in a very cachet way knows a lot about them. I'd be really surprised if this doesn't get picked up for a movie at some
And that
point.
was called 25 Days.
25 days, yeah. And I wish I'd written down which the origin country was. It's someplace snowy.
Yeah, endings, so many times for books can really just like you can like. I'm trying to think of the book. It was the one where at the end, oh, Jesse Plemons is in it, and it's you. I'm thinking of ending things. That was it.
Yes.
When I re That's still one of the books I love most. But like the last two pages, I was like, oh. Like up until then, it was the best thing I'd ever read. And Fight Club kind of felt that way a little bit when Fight Club, when I read the book of Fight Club before I saw the movie. There's some things, if they take a twist or a thing and it doesn't work for you, it just can everything go deflates, right? And it's such a bummer
And
sometimes,
it's a
but
lot of times I kind of want it to be going in one direction, but it's a Danish author. He apparently lives in Spain now, but
okay.
it's a Danish book. But yeah, there's so many books that like because I think it's slower than a film, I
Yeah.
will perceive where I think it's going, and then a lot of times I get upset when it does not go in that direction. And that's what happened with Body of Water. Like I'm reading it, expecting it to keep the world to keep exploding, much in the way that The Mist does, because I'm immediately like, oh, it's like The Mist or The Blob in a diner in Appalachia, and it's got to get huge. You know, we're going to find out that the government's involved, or, you know, a portal opened up to another realm. And then when you find out what's actually happening, it was like, oh, it wasn't that. It wasn't what I wrote in my head.
Well, I think
Which
it's
is so
I think it's
stupid,
also
but
especially like people who make movies or want to make movies. You like every book I've ever read, it's I'm making a movie in my head while I'm reading it,
yeah,
and then at a certain point you're disappointed by the writing because it's not doing what you
it's
wanted
not
the
the movie
thing.
I was making, yeah,
Which is the fun
it's
part of it, but.
everything. So, I will say 25 Days. This is a really fun Christmas horror, slashery,
Okay.
stalkery movie. You know, the last couple of chapters, I was kind of like, really? but yeah. But I did just start reading. This is one of the best reviewed horror books from 2024, and I'm just now getting it to, called The Haunting of Velkwood.
Okay.
And this was one where a lot of people were saying, if you liked Backrooms and how liminal it is, read this. And so I'm excited to start it. I'm going to start it on the plane tomorrow.
Okay, well, let me know how that one goes.
Yeah.
I'll try to get another thing read. I start reading saying that's kind of high, like it's still genre, but it's written in a highbrow, more experimental style. And I really slow down when I start reading things. I find them so hard. Like I'll get through 10 pages at a time instead of 50, and it makes it so hard. But I don't want to put it down too long, otherwise I'll never finish it. So, but it's interesting. It's like stream of conscious, basically, from the
Oh,
characters.
those
It's like,
are always
yeah. And so
harder.
it's
Yeah.
just written in a way that isn't quite as engaging, but it's well written. So I'm going to stick with it for a little longer and see
It's
if I
like
can get
reading
through it.
Blood Meridian, where I'm like, God, just use a period, please. Just
That's
put a
yeah.
comma in here. I don't know where anything stops or ends. So, yeah.
I don't know if I ever would have finished if I hadn't been stuck in a hotel room for and couldn't get out for 15 days. That was my reading. Then I got through it. It's a great book, but
It's a great book, yeah. I mean, it's brutal as fuck
it's what
and
it is.
terrible, but yeah, it's a great book.
All right,
So
well, safe trip.
anyways, yeah, safe trip to you too.
Yeah.
Hopefully you guys see some good stuff. Highly recommending the Lost Boys musical. I
I
hear
keep
it's
hearing.
great.
All right.
So yes, but I'll be up in Canada doing some finishing touches on the movie while Elric is touring New York City for a
For a
while.
few,
So
yeah.
yeah. But we'll be back in 2 weeks with another Deep Cuts, and then before long we'll be back with a regular Colors. So thank you guys so much for the support. Have a good one.